morning,
more compelling talk radio, 1320 WILS, is live in Lansing with the Michigan Association of Broadcasters Excellence Award winner for Best Personality. This is the Capital City Recap with Michael Cohen.
Good evening. Wow, it is warm. 80 degrees and balmy out there. Michael Cohen, producer Mike Peterson, 1320 WILS. Tonight, we'll talk about this major commissioner meeting for the BWL tomorrow. They're going to decide on whether or not they'll have to cough up $1 million for fired general manager Peter Lark to finish off his contract. We'll hear from one of the commissioners tonight ahead of that meeting. That and a lot more. But first, Governor Snyder today discussing, proposing dramatic changes to the criminal justice system here in Michigan just this afternoon to discuss if any of his ideas will get any traction and if they're good ideas. We're joined by Barbara Levine. She's with the Citizens Alliance on Prisons and Public Spending. Barbara, great to have you here.
Hey, thanks for having me, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, how did you personally get involved in the issue of prisons and public spending? Why are you so interested?
Well, decades ago, I'm an attorney who started her career representing indigent defendants who were appealing their convictions. So most of my clients were incarcerated. This goes back to the 70s. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I've had firsthand contact with the Michigan prison system for decades.
And how do you describe the prison system as it stands now?
I think it's bigger than it needs to be. I think we could have a smaller system that did more with the people we have. We've got a lot of people, the size of the system depends on how many people come in the intake and how many people go out the back door. And in the 80s and the 90s, Michigan, like the rest of the country, was in sort of a highly punitive kind of get tough mode. And so sentences got longer and paroles got harder to get. And the average prisoner length of stay got longer, and that's what forced our system to grow.
Okay.
And so it's time to rethink all that.
But now, if we loosen things up, let prisoners out earlier, I mean, could that put some of us at risk?
No, first of all, you're not talking really about early release. I mean, that's when you talk about paroling people on their minimum sentences, that means they've served the minimum amount of time that judges have imposed. It's a question on the parole end of whether you're going to keep people beyond their minimum sentences. At the front end, it's a question of how long those minimum sentences really need to be. And there's an enormous amount of research that shows there's really not a connection between how long people serve and their likelihood of reoffending. Mm-hmm. So all the proposals that we've been making over the years, and CAPS has been around for about 15 years now, and the proposals that Governor Snyder's making, many of which overlap, would in no way threaten public safety.
Now, did he take a position on drug offenders or nonviolent offenders, how we should treat them specifically?
No, he didn't address drug offenders specifically. And Michigan had major drug law reforms back in 2003, for one thing. And Michigan was never one of the states that really threw the book at very low-level drug offenders like some states did. So while certainly there's always room to improve, the drug offenders are not a large percentage of our prisoner population.
So where's our system being too harsh, then?
Well, even for people who've committed serious, very serious crimes, there's a point past which it makes no sense. I mean, if you're going to give somebody 20 years is a very, very long time to spend in prison, 15 or 20 years. So when you talk about keeping people for 40 and 50 years, what you end up with is a prison system full of very old people who couldn't harm anybody if they wanted to.
Is the idea, though, just to keep them away from us, though?
The idea is to be very tough, and I think people didn't think back in the 80s and 90s when the sentences were getting longer, they just didn't look at what that meant 20 or 30 years out. Mm-hmm. And now prison systems around the country are turning into two things, nursing homes and mental health hospitals, because that was another big issue in Michigan when we deinstitutionalized the mentally ill. The money didn't adequately follow people into the community. So now 20% of your prison population are folks who have serious mental health issues.
20%, okay. But from your experience as an attorney, do you find that those that are released from prison, do they tend to stick to the straight and narrow after that?
It varies by the offense. It varies by age. Michigan has done well with prisoner reentry and needs to do more of that. I mean, that was a big theme in the governor's speech that was just terrific in terms of giving people, while they're in, more of the skills they need to succeed when they get out, and also once they do get out, giving them more support in the community.
Was he specific enough in the address today?
Well, he was much more specific. I mean, he only could do so much in 20 minutes, but his full message that's online is terrific. I mean, he's very oriented, as he always is, towards practical problem solving and looking at the evidence. And his whole tone was trying to help people succeed when they get out, as opposed to sort of endless punishment, whether it serves any purpose or not.
Right. Tell me this, though, because he wants to connect the Corrections Department with the Talent Investment Agency to, you know, I guess, to provide prisoners with opportunities. Is it really skill that's the issue, or is it their prison record that keeps them from getting jobs?
Well, it's both. I mean, people who come to prison, by and large, tend not to have much education or much experience in the workforce or much skill, so they need that. Mm-hmm. But breaking down employer perspectives on the significance of a prior record is also incredibly important. I mean, in this
How do you do that, though?
Well, one of the techniques that's common in some places, and a few Michigan communities have already adopted it, is ban the box, trying to get employers to not screen people right off the top based on whether they have a prior record, but to screen them like any other applicant and only ask about their prior record if they get past an initial screening on their merits. So that's certainly one technique. And just educating people more about what a prior record actually means.
Right. Do you think employers are right to hesitate to hire a felon, let's say?
Well, employers are understandably worried about liability, number one. And number two, of course, it depends on the job market. When unemployment was really high, employers could afford to be very selective, and that's an easy screening tool. But I think the department can do a lot, and that's where the governor's headed in terms of working more with employers.
I'm talking to Barbara Levine with Citizens Alliance on Prisons and Public Spending. Do you draw a line between violent and nonviolent criminals? Is there like a sharp line there?
We certainly don't. I mean, because, in fact, it is many of the people who have the most serious offenses who are actually the least likely to reoffend. And it goes against people.
Really, even the violent ones?
Particularly.
Really?
People, the lowest recidivist rates of anybody by offense type are homicide and sex offenders.
Well, is it because they're in prison and they can't reoffend? Or?
No. When they get out, they have the lowest reoffense rates. And that's proven by tons of research. Well,
what explains that, do you think?
Well, because they're often impulse crimes or reactions to specific situations. And once people do them, first of all, people often feel deep regret over what they've done. These are often first offenders, and they're, of course, judged harshly, as they should be. And they may get very serious time as a result of it. But you're not talking about people who are committing economic crimes because that's been chosen as sort of a means of income or a way to feed an addiction.
Now, the sentencing reforms, though, that he's talking about, like what kinds of reforms? Are we talking about changing like a 15-year sentence to a 5-year sentence, or what are we talking about?
Well, not necessarily. First of all, every few months that you lower the average length of stay is an enormous difference when you multiply that by thousands of prisoners. Mm-hmm. So you can save a lot of money and a lot of bed space in corrections the minute you start shaving the average length of stay, even by a few months. But what he's talking about, there's now a Criminal Justice Policy Commission, and for full disclosure, I was appointed one of the members of it. Mm-hmm. It represents very diverse. This is legislation that passed last fall under the leadership of Rep. Joe Haveman. And it restores. We used to have a sentencing commission in this state that developed sentencing guidelines. The sentencing commission was eliminated, and the legislature started going back to developing sentencing on its own.
The legislature was setting the rules. Okay, so now you're going to be involved in this. So what does that mean? You're going to look at sentences and adjust them by a six-month type of period? Or?
It could be. I mean, it could be you can look at the guidelines. And right now the guidelines ranges. Judges are supposed to pick a minimum sentence within a recommended range, but those ranges are very broad. So people who have very similar prior records and committed similar offenses can get very different sentences. There's a lot of disparity among counties. So one of the things that can be done is you can narrow those ranges. You can start them a little bit lower.
Okay. And these are recommendations then, or are they
well,
rules?
The commission makes recommendations to the legislature.
I got you. And the legislature would then decide on that. He wants to release more elderly prisoners that don't pose a threat. About what age does that tend to be the case?
Well, in the prison world, elderly tends to be anything over 50. And I'll give you one example. It's a group that he didn't talk about specifically. We focused for a long time on the parolable lifers, because there's two kinds of life sentences in this state. Mm-hmm. For first-degree murder, you get life without parole, and that's automatic. But for a lot of other serious offenses, like second-degree murder and armed robbery and first-degree criminal sexual conduct, you can get life for any term, and it's up to the judge. But that's parolable life. And there are hundreds and hundreds of prisoners who were given parolable life sentences, which made them eligible for release after serving 10 years. And they got these sentences 20, 30,
well,
even 40 years ago.
The parole board decided not to let them go, though, right?
Because the policies of the board changed. It really didn't have anything to do with the merits of the cases. Mm. There was a long period when the board said life means life, which was never the intention of the sentencing judges. So now these folks are like in their 50s and 60s and have done, in many cases, far more time than their sentencing judges intended. So there are 850 parolable lifers who have been eligible for parole for years. So
you're saying the parole boards have not released them because of policy, is that right?
Because of the way they decided to treat life sentences.
Okay. But don't they come up for parole every year or two or several years?
Oh, no. Parolable lifers only come up every 5 years, because that's one of the changes that was made in the way parolable lifers are treated.
But even every 5 years, wouldn't there be a good reason for a board to decide not to let them go?
Well, no. What they're doing is, they come up every 5 years and the board sort of says, you're a lifer and this is how we do lifers. The board has now changed its attitude some and has started to release more lifers, but it's very, very slow. So that's another population that's aging, very low risk.
And it would save us money, of course.
And it would save you lots of money.
I mean, so much more we can talk about. Unfortunately, Barbara, out of time, but we'll have you on again. Barbara Levine, Citizens Alliance on Prisons and Public Spending. Barbara, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mike.